Well, good evening, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us tonight Philip Deck, and he is certainly one of our supporters. He sent me some interesting material on his views of what really happened on September 11th, almost 4 years ago, when our life and the future of our country changed forever. And with that as the background, Philip, how long have you been studying what happened on September 11th? What caused you to question what we were told? After all, the government said it was just a straight, open and closed situation. There were the terrorists. We had no idea that they were here. We had no idea they were going to attack in the United States. We thought if an attack came, it would be overseas. We were just totally taken by surprise. But is there some question in your mind that perhaps what we've been told isn't true?
Well, good evening, Dr. Stan. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I suspected from the very beginning that we were being lied to, and it didn't take me as much by surprise as many of our fellow Americans, because I expected sooner or later, because of our foreign policy and many things that were going on prior to 9/11, that something of fairly major proportion would happen. So when something like this took place, I grieved regarding the people that were hurt, and the videos were certainly stunning that we saw on TV. But I expected sooner or later something would happen, and two things happened, Dr. Stan, that day that really gave me a wake up call. One, I got a phone call from a friend in the early evening asking me if I thought there was something strange about the way those towers came down. And that certainly got me thinking, because they did look like they came down in a very odd fashion. And he said that when he was over in Vietnam, that the North Vietnamese would set off an explosion in a place, and then they would have a secondary explosion in order to harm more people, the people that went in to try to help those who survived the attack. And this gentleman over the phone, I can't really give you his name, but he told me that to him, these look like controlled demolitions of those buildings, Stan.
Well, that was certainly, I mean, this has been suggested, but we haven't ever really had any proof of anything, and certainly apparently there are a lot of experts have said it could have come down that way. There's some, of course, who said that it couldn't have come down that way, but their voices have been muted, and they've been attacked and demonized for daring to question the official government policy or official government explanation of what took place on September 11th.
Well, the official explanation, in the eyes of a lot of fellow Americans, is just full of holes, and a good percentage of the American people believe we're being lied to.
Well, and I think that we know the polls, at least in New York City, where well over 50% of the people believe the government had advanced knowledge of the attack.
Yes.
And did not try to stop it. And if that indeed is true, that's unconscionable. And certainly there should be trials, but every time we want to investigate why the government objects, everything is top secret. We can't let the American people know what happened, because they might tell Osama bin Laden hiding in the cave. We'll be right back here in just a moment with our special guest, Philip Deck, as he outlines his concern for what's going on today. Well, Philip, why don't you pick up the story from there?
Okay, Dr. Stan. It was either on the very day 9/11 or the day after I went to an internet website called SkolniksReport.com. Have you heard of Sherman Skolnick?
Yes, I know. I've interviewed Sherman.
Yes. I went to his website, and he had an article on his website regarding 9/11. And I'm pretty sure it was that very day, but I'm not positive about it, Dr. Stan. But anyway, he was discussing the bin Laden family and the Bush family, and he discussed the ties that they have through dealing with oil. And in his article, he said something that really got me to think and do the search that he said folks should do if they think that the government lied about 9/11 and what they were saying already the very first day. So he said, Dr. Stan, on his site, that folks should do a Google search and to enter in Global Hawk. So I did that. I did a Google search, entered that in, and I found out about this plane that they have, an unmanned drone that they can fly by remote control. And I began to think right away, as I read that, that this could very well be what happened with these planes, remote control. So I was thinking along those lines at the very beginning, remote control of these planes and these towers not coming down the way the government said, but coming down by controlled demolition. And I would challenge anybody who thinks that that is preposterous, the demolition of these buildings, to go onto the internet and study the various websites that you can go to and look at the clips of the videos of these towers coming down. And you can see in some of these clips individual explosions. You can see how neatly these buildings come down, just as straight, especially Building 7. That's quite incredible the way Building 7 came down. But
You know, I think Building 7 is the weak point in the administration's explanation. Certainly, you could, in fact, I don't even like to talk about the major buildings come down. I might have my suspicions, but Building 7 was not hit by a plane. It was actually separated by another building from the Twin Towers. And I think the most amazing thing is that that building came down just like a demolition from below. It looked just like you take any of the hotels in Las Vegas. We'll be right back with Philip Deck in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Philip was saying that it was on the day following September 11th that he went onto the internet, and he went to the site of Sherman Skolnick. And Sherman Skolnick had said, go onto the internet and look up Global Hawk. Well, Philip did, and Global Hawk is a government program by which they can fly planes by remote control. In other words, they can completely take it over, and they can direct them anywhere they want to from a distance. So, and then he was commenting that as you look at those pictures of the buildings coming down, there's something very strange the way they come down. In fact, have you ever seen a picture of a skyscraper being brought down, you know, in old downtown area? Usually they will have the explosions about halfway up to begin to topple the top part of the building, and then, of course, explosions at several other layers to topple the whole building. But if you've ever seen any of the planned explosions, they look very, very similar to the one that we witnessed on television that day. But then, of course, Philip was talking about Building 7 coming down. And what was specifically unusual to you about Building 7, Philip?
Well, the way it came down from the bottom, Stan, like you mentioned, I was thinking yesterday when I was doing this research and planning to get the best possible presentation I could for this evening for you and the listeners. I was thinking if you had a hot stove, a wood stove in your home, and you took a stick of butter from the refrigerator and stood the stick of butter on its end and just set it on a hot wood stove, the way it would melt on that stove, to me, would resemble what we saw with Building 7 coming straight down. It looked like it melted right into the ground. Very, very strange. And this building was not hit by a plane. And it just came down so perfectly. I've seen clips of it over and over again on the internet, and it's just absolutely amazing way this building came down. It was a professional job, whoever did this.
Well, if certainly there would be no possible way that they could have gotten explosives into that building after the 9/11 attack. So if there were explosives in that building to take it down, and there really had to be explosives, because the way it came down, it didn't tilt to one side or the other. It just came right on down, like any of the hotel buildings that, take down in Las Vegas or any other place. So obviously the explosives were there ahead of time. And if they were ahead of time, then somebody had to know about the attack and be planning to simply destroy all of the buildings. And of course, if you really look at the pictures of the other buildings, building 3, 4, 5, and 6, they were all gutted from within, almost as somebody wanted to destroy every one of those buildings, almost as if there had been explosions in those other buildings. We never see pictures of buildings 3, 4, 5, and 6. Have you noticed that? I mean, I have them. I'm sure you've seen them because you've been looking for it. But few other people have ever seen what happened to those other buildings.
Well, you find a few on the Internet, Steve.
Right,
they certainly hide it from you when you go to the news, the regular news media, and try to get the truth from them. Didn't they hide Building 7 after the first few times? Maybe they played one or two clips of Building 7 coming down, and the mainstream media pretty much decided they were not going to play that anymore.
Well, that was because, you see, that was the weak point of the whole story.
Yes.
Anybody who saw that building know that that was demolition. And if it was demolition, then why did they take the building down? And if they did have explosives in there, then they had to have known what was going to happen. And, of course, that would be criminal activity, and somebody would be responsible for the deaths of 2,700 people who died that day in the planes and in the buildings. And people say, well, nobody would be that cruel and crass, and yet if you've ever read the report of Operation Northwood, you understand what happened at Pearl Harbor. You understand that there was no Gulf of Tonkin incident. It was staged to get us into the war, and 58,000 Americans died, and 1 million South Vietnamese died, and 2 million North Vietnamese died in that futile war, a war we fought from the very beginning to lose. When you understand there really is evil in the world, maybe you could understand what happened that morning. And then people want to say George Bush was responsible. George Bush didn't even know what was going on. He was frightened to death that morning. If you ever saw the pictures of him sitting in the classroom reading the book about the goat or whatever it was, you know, the pet goat, he was frightened to death. That's why he sat in the classroom for 6 or 7 minutes while America was under attack. He really didn't know what to do.
Well, I agree with you, Dr. Stan. I think he was kept absolutely in the dark. I get the same impression. Did you get the documentation packet I sent you in the mail?
It's sitting right in front of me, so why don't you take over and go through it, Philip?
Wonderful. We look at the first page here. It says New York Times, September 12th. The day after we were attacked, and the first page says U.S. attacked, and the first line here is very interesting. It says hijacked jets destroy Twin Towers. Now, there is this possibility that these jets could very well have been flown in there by remote control, especially by the way that some people have mentioned that one of them at least took a particular turn that would have been very difficult to do if a regular pilot was piloting this plane. And when we see this headline, hijacked jets destroy Twin Towers, there are two things here that could very well be erroneous. One, the jets were hijacked. With this global hawk, you don't need hijackers. And two, the jets destroying the Twin Towers. I don't believe, and many Americans and many of your listeners tonight, Dr. Stan, do not believe that the jets destroy the Twin Towers. Many Americans are convinced that these came down by controlled demolitions. And then you have the third line here. It says, and hit Pentagon in day of terror. Now, you've seen the wonderful video, 9/11 in Plain Sight, by Dave Von Kleist. And he shows very credible evidence that whatever hit the Pentagon was not the plane they claimed hit the Pentagon. So this pretty much blows this third line out of the water. And if you see the explosions on the South Tower, Dr. Stan, and you look at this massive, there are three fireballs here in this explosion. And you see on the right-hand side the North Tower is burning, and the smoke is very dark. It looks like an oxygen-starved fire. it looks like it's beginning to go out when this second tower, the south tower, is hit at approximately 9:03 in the morning. You see all of this gasoline, jet fuel, going up in flames, and at the same time the government's telling us, Dr. Stan, that it's this burning jet fuel that brought down these buildings. Although steel buildings have never come down before in the history of our country, I guess. But they did, we're told, this day, even one building that was not hit by a plane. But how could steel be melted by this kerosene? Jet fuel is like kerosene, from what I understand. This jet fuel melting these steel beams, when you see these huge fireballs right here on the cover of the New York Times. How could there be that much left over to heat these steel beams to bring this building down? And why did this come down first? Before the North Tower, when the North Tower was hit first, and the North Tower was burning longer, and this South Tower, most of the jet fuel was used up in this massive, these three fireballs that we see in the paper here on the front page. That being the case, how could this South Tower come down first, Dr. Stan?
Well, you're asking me, as a retired orthopedic surgeon. I mean, I am concerned about it, but, you know, they have done such a good job. They've had their federal investigators, they've had their experts, but they appoint the experts, and they determine what the outcome is going to be, and then they tell the American people, there's nothing to worry about. You can trust us. We would never lie to you. Those buildings came down just as we... Well, no other buildings have ever come down like this before, but we want to assure you that's exactly how this happened. One of the things that really is so disturbing about it is, if you remember having the pictures come down, it was just like the buildings were falling about at the rate of gravity. In other words, you would think there'd be some resistance from some of the internal structures there that would have prevented this whole thing from collapsing, or it would have tilted to one side, perhaps more so on one side, and the top would have fallen off rather than just going down almost like an escalator.
Well, precisely, Dr. Stan. It was just too smooth. I remember quite some time ago after this happened, you had a wonderful interview with Karen Lee Bixman, and you were discussing this very thing, just how smoothly these came down. And anyone who was to watch this several times with an open mind and see all three of these buildings coming down the way they did, even the firemen, it's on the video, 9/11 in Plain Sight. Alex Jones has it on his video, 9/11, The Road to Tyranny, the testimonies of the firemen who were right there. And they said it sounded like boom, 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 rapid explosions. And one of the firemen, right there in the interview, used a chopping motion with his hands and showed how these explosions came down the side of the building.
Of course, what they're going to, the explanation the other side is going to use is, well, what you were seeing was each floor hitting the floor below, and that's why it made that sort of a sound. Now, I don't know, quite frankly, and I've always been very, very suspicious of that, but I know what the other side is going to say. That's why I'd like to talk about Building 7, because there is no logical explanation for Building 7 coming down. They have their explanations for the Twin Towers. Admittedly, they may be weak, but they've convinced an awful lot of people. But there is no way they can explain Building 7. So we'll get back to that in just a moment as we get here. Philip Deck is, you're absolutely right. There were some of the people, some of the firemen who said they heard the explosions. But isn't it interesting that those were never played on ABC, CBS, and NBC? Or if they were, they played one time, and then suddenly all those clips by the firemen who talked about they felt there were explosions, they heard the explosions. Why, those were never shown again in America. Who would be powerful enough to censor the news to prevent the American people from hearing anything that might question the official party line? Well, we'll be back in just a moment with Philip, and as he explores these ideas, and I think they're all reasons for valid concern. Well, Philip, go right ahead with your thoughts on this, because I share your concern, but I'm playing the devil's advocate position the other people will play, because I don't know about those buildings, but I do know Building 7 was obviously demolition.
It had to be, Dr. Stan. And Larry Silverstein actually admitted to it on PBS.
Well, what he said was that we wanted to pull the building, and were they talking about pulling the building down or pulling the firemen out of the building? That he didn't say we're going to blow up the building. He just said we're going to pull the building, which is a term that could have either meaning. That's the explanation they're going to give.
Well, they're going to give that, but he said then they watched the building come down. Those were his final words.
Right.
After the firemen decided to give the order to pull the building, and he said that they watched the building come down, so they were prepared for it to come down.
Right.
There were little fires in that building, according to some of the photographs that I've seen.
And I think that is, of course, the most damning thing of all, is Building Number 7. That and the fact that those passports, that's always bothered me. The passport that somehow got out of the pilot, out of the pocket of one of the hijackers there, and you know, in the North Tower, and got out of the flaming inferno of the plane, and then flaming inferno of the building, and floated down to land on the sidewalk, and was turned over to the government, and it even appeared in the FBI the website for a few days. And it had the name of one of those pilots in the plane. Now, the chances that would have happened would be about 1 in a trillion, I would say. And nothing else fluttered down. No other identification from any of the other people on the plane. So, you know, if it was, wasn't a 1 in a trillion chance that it was planted, and it was planted, then they knew the names of the hijackers ahead of time. Same thing happened in Pennsylvania, where one of the passports survived, only this one was partly burned, and that was also up on the FBI webpage. So you have to understand that if they knew who was going to be on the plane and each plane ahead of time, why, they knew exactly what was going to happen.
Well, you're absolutely right, Dr. Stan, and this front page of the New York Times at the very bottom says, Washington and nation plunge into fight with enemy hard to identify and punish. Now, it was just not long after this appeared in the paper and we heard about this in the news, that we were dealing with an enemy that was hard to identify and punish. And the next thing you know, just like this magic passport shows up, we have a magic list of hijackers, Dr. Stan, 19 of them.
And it's amazing, the bumbling FBI that had no idea what was going on, didn't know who any of the hijackers were, had no concept even that the attack was going to come in the United States, within 24 hours knew who they all were and knew their whole life history, and had pictures of them. That is the most amazing feat of investigative, FBI investigation in the entire world.
Well, I read, Dr. Stan, that they showed up at these flight schools to seize records not that long after the attack.
There's one person we've talked to, Daniel Hopsicker, who said who talked to one of the people from the flight schools, within 4 hours of the attack, the FBI was there at the flight school in Venice, Florida. Here, they had no idea who these people were, they had no idea anything about them, and yet within 4 hours they were in front of the home of one of the people who worked in the Venice flight school. So that really is amazing when they really put their mind to it, how efficient the FBI can be.
Well, Daniel Hopsicker did a wonderful job, and he's continuing his investigation down there.
Hold on, stop right there. Well, Philip Dick, we got so involved, I'm sorry, but anyway, Philip is with us, and he was just saying what a wonderful job Daniel Hopsicker had done. He's an investigative journalist who's working down in Venice, Florida, on the flight school in Muhammad Atta, and three or four of the other hijackers went to, and at least according to Daniel Hopsicker, it would appear that there were strong ties between that flight school and a certain government intelligence agency. So pick up the story there, Philip.
Okay, Dr. Stan. I'd like to point out one more thing on the front of this New York Times. Did you notice over in the right-hand corner here in the middle of the page where you see how light these buildings are in this little photograph? The sky is light. You see the North Tower smoking. And this plane is coming in, allegedly United Airlines Flight 175. And I think it's very suspicious, Dr. Stan, that I've taken photographs for about 30 years, and to see the sky as light as it is, and these buildings as light as they are, and to see the plane so dark. This plane does not look like it would be United Airlines Flight 175. I've seen a picture of that plane on the internet. And this plane here is so dark, and they can't use the excuse that it's because the aperture was set a certain way on the camera, not allowing enough light to come in, so it made the plane dark, because the sky is light and the buildings are so washed out. And they're light. And here we are with this dark plane that really looks nothing like United Airlines Flight 175. And I just found that very interesting, because there are websites that you can go to, and it, you can see it on 9/11 in Plain Sight, that the DVD done by Mr. Von Kleist. And it's obviously a plane that looks quite different from what they're telling us, the official story. And on the DVD, 9/11 in Plain Sight, someone says from Fox News, one of the reporters, this does not look like a regular airline. It doesn't look like something that even belongs in this area. And when I went back and found this front page article from the New York Times, took it off the internet, I had that in mind when I looked at this plane. And these buildings are so washed out with the sunlight. The picture looks like it's overexposed. The sky's very light. And this plane is so dark. And I put that together with what that man had said, that reporter on Fox News, that said this plane does not look like a passenger plane. And there was a woman who called out in the crowd saying, that is not a United Airlines plane. And people were crying out in fear when that whole thing happened, when the South Tower was struck. And it just, I just couldn't help but notice, Dr. Stan, how dark this plane looks. I would like them to explain that.
Well, I'm sure that they don't want to explain much of anything. In fact, they withheld all sorts of information. Most of the information that they have is still classified to this day. In fact, most of the information, much of the information that the 9/11 Commission asked for was classified and was never released. They have actually taken the whole 9/11 hearings and they've classified them so we won't know what happened for 30 years. Now, if there's nothing to conceal, why are they concealing it?
Well, you're right, Dr. Stan. It certainly sounds like the JFK assassination. Why do they hide these things away for so long?
They're still hiding a lot of the facts about what happened at Pearl Harbor over 60 years ago.
Well, they lied to us about that, and they lied to us about JFK, and then they gave us a phony excuse for why we were in Vietnam. And then the Ruby Ridge situation, while people were protesting what was taking place at Ruby Ridge, Vicki Weaver was killed right there while the protesting was going on. And then you fast forward to the Branch Davidians, and they certainly lied to us about that. They have a track record, Dr. Stan, for lying to us. And while people protested what was being done down there in Texas in 1993, they turned around and they did what they did. They arrested protesters who were peacefully protesting, and they did exactly what they intended to do on, I believe it was April 19th, 1993. That did not have to happen. They provoked that situation. And then in 1995, the Oklahoma City bombing. We were lied to about that. Americans know we were. And Benjamin Parton, the Brigadier General, and the fellow Ted Gunderson from the FBI both said that somebody had to have access to that building in order to plant explosives in there. Now, you fast forward now to 9/11. Somebody had to have access, Stan, to Building 7 and to those Twin Towers to get explosives in there.
Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Philip Deck, and we're going to be just going through his views of what happened on that fateful morning, September 11th. Remember that that was a watershed event. America will never be the same again. And they're using that event to justify establishing a police state in America in the name of preserving our freedom. Because we wouldn't want, of course, Osama bin Laden to win the battle, would we? Well, Philip, why don't you go ahead and pick up the story?
Okay, Dr. Stan. I found an article very interesting that Jim Mars had published just 2 days after 9/11. And it's one of the things that showed me that there were quite a number of Americans that just didn't believe the official story. And I'm not surprised Jim Mars was one of them after his book that he wrote about the Kennedy assassination crossfire. And from the very beginning, he was just one of the skeptics that just didn't believe the official story. And he has a little article here called Who's Truly Behind the Attack on America? And he was just sharing his thoughts with anybody willing to read this. He says toward the end, Dr. Stan, of his article, but the biggest threat comes from the inner elite of the globalist societies. Within hours of the attack, the television and radio airwaves were full of ranking Council on Foreign Relations members, such as Henry Kissinger, Wesley Clark, Alexander Haig, Strobe Talbot. Talbot, President Clinton's Deputy Secretary of State, told Time magazine in 1992, in the next century, speaking of the time we're living in now, nations as we know it will be obsolete. Now, how did he know that? All states will recognize a single global authority.
Well, of course, this war, the current war, the Third World War, which is coming, I believe will usher in the New World Order, the New World Religion. At least that is what the elite hope. And the Council on Foreign Relations are the elite who control both political parties, who work closely with tyrants all throughout the world. Their ultimate goal, of course, is to use those tyrants to support their goal, their effort, for the New World Order and the New World Religion. So you're absolutely right.
Well, there's no question, Dr. Stan, that this is certainly playing right into their hands, an event like this happening. They took full advantage of the Oklahoma City bombing to pass anti-terrorist legislation that Ted Gunderson at the time said we didn't need. What they need to do is enforce the laws we have. Now, if they enforce the laws we have, Dr. Stan, they would have most likely stopped many of these so-called terrorists from coming into the country to begin with. And like Paul Thompson's wonderful timeline that he put together, I saw that first on the Internet, and then I found his book at one of the bookstores. He had mentioned in his timeline that several of these terrorists that allegedly hijacked these planes, they were picked up for various reasons.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with Philip Deck. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Philip Deck. And Philip has been working, trying to understand what really happened on September 11th. And he was simply saying that there's evidence that several of the terrorists were actually picked up here in the United States. Were you speaking on the morning of September 11th? Because we know that nine of them were actually stopped before they got on the plane. But the Bush administration had lowered the requirements for questionable people getting on the plane. Now, why would they have done something like that when the August 6th PDF, Presidential Daily Briefing Report, had suggested that there was going to be a hijacking and they were going to use those planes to attack our buildings? Why would they have lowered the requirement for scrutiny on people getting in? That nine of those people were actually picked up that morning. Go ahead.
Well, it certainly looks like that was done for a specific reason, and they ought to explain themselves. Another thing that I find very interesting, Dr. Stan, is we have pictures of Muhammad Atta and the fellow he was with that morning at the Portland, Maine jetport very early in the morning. I think it was around 6 a.m. And at the same time, I don't know that we have any, I haven't seen any video footage of any of these other hijackers as they were going through the airports, getting ready to board the planes. They certainly don't have any lack of video cameras around. It's almost as bad as England, where they say people are photographed an average of 100 times a day. And I would say, Dr. Stan, that if we don't wake up and do something about what's happening here, we'll be going through what the British are going through with cameras on just about every street corner.
Well, they're already beginning, of course, to check the bags on the people getting onto the subway in New York City because of the London bombing. And the president said, we've really got to have more security. We've got to have more surveillance of the American people to preserve our freedom.
And it's very interesting you speak of the London bombing, that at the same time these bombings were taking place, there just happened to be drills that day. And the drills coincided with where these bombings took place, the very times they took place, and people were going through drills at that time, a scenario that was almost identical.
Now you're speaking right now on September 11th. There actually was a drill that morning, according to Michael Rupert in his book, Crossing the Rubicon, where they were simulating a plane that had been hijacked and was going to hit a government building. That was certainly smart of those terrorists to pick just that morning when they were having the simulated attack so that the air traffic controllers would be confused. That was pretty smart of those hijackers, wasn't it?
It was, Dr. Stan. Very clever people running this from a cave in Afghanistan.
And, of course, the same thing happened in Great Britain on the morning of the July 7th attack. There was an exercise that morning simulating a terrorist attack on the subways.
When we stop and think of who could possibly be behind this, I have a sheet here I just wanted to give you a little paragraph from, brief summary of the New World Order. On the second page of that, the second to the last paragraph, it reads like this: the New World Order is to be implemented through regionalism. Basically, the world is to be divided into geographical regions, internationally, nationally, and locally. And these regions are to be the new units of government, replacing the old traditional notions of nation states, cities, towns, villages, etc. Political power is to be concentrated in the executive branch of government, removing it from the control of the people through their elected legislative representatives. The choices presented to the people for the elected executives are limited to candidates selected by the political establishment and not by the people themselves. Control over every aspect of human life is to be exercised in the form of an administrative dictatorship from the top down through an enormous bureaucracy of appointed officials, specialists, and planners, accountable only to elected executives. In this way, the outward form of democracy is retained to an extent, but the power is entirely taken away from the people and concentrated in government. It is being carried out gradually with appropriate, quote, education, unquote, of the populace.
Now, who actually wrote that? I'm reading it here. You sent me a copy of it, and I agree with everything that said. That is the plan, but who wrote this?
This came from a website called PennsylvaniaCrier.com. And it's written, Dr. Stan, P-E-N-N, hyphen, Crier, C-R-I-E-R, .com. And they have some excellent information on their website. They talk about the Carnegie Foundation. They have something on Rhodes Scholarships. And what I like about their information, it's brief, right to the point, and it makes good flyers just to hand out to folks, to give them just enough information to get them going to find out what's happening to our country.
Well, I think that there is a master plan. Of course, if you read the writings of even Cecil Rhodes' Confession of Faith, it wrote back in 1870, talking about his plan at that time to create a secret society to take over control of the world.
Yes. And that's, of course, where they're going.
And, of course, what you're describing is very, very similar to the World Bank water policy, which, of course, our good friend Jeannie Soderman, who's our producer tonight, has. And she points out that that's exactly what the World Bank water program is to change the structure of regional government and, of course, to do away with total concept of representative government. And the elite then will determine who we elect to office. In other words, the facade of democracy, but in truth, ruling elite who will control the destiny of our nation and our children.
That's exactly right, Dr. Stan. And they've had it planned for over a century here in America, haven't they?
Absolutely. Well, that's what we keep trying to tell people. Go ahead.
Well, you do a wonderful job, Dr. Stan. I don't get a chance to listen to your show live from where I am, but I enjoy the tapes. And the CD that I got, Alex Jones, it was very well recorded, The Rise of the Police State.
He's doing a good job.
Yes, he is. He is. He's doing a fantastic job. I have here the message concerning collapse of the World Trade Center towers. It's the next article that I had in line. This fellow, David Rostchek, R-O-S-T-C-H-E-C-K, his article ended up on the Internet. It was written at 3:12 p.m. on September 11th, and it's very interesting the way he describes this, because he says that he's an engineer. And from an engineer's viewpoint, this is the way he looks at this whole thing, what happened with the towers. And he, at the very bottom of the page here, he says, later, the second building suddenly crumbles into dust. I love the way he describes this. In a smooth wave running from the top of the building above the burned part, down through all the stories at an equal speed, the debris falls primarily inward. The tower does not break off intact and collapse into other buildings. The bottom does not crumble before the top. The burned out section crumbles also. The crumbling comes from the top, above the damage. It moves at a uniform rate. All of the structural members are destroyed in a smooth pattern, so there is no remaining skeleton. The damage is uniform, symmetric, and total. In summary, it looks exactly like a demolition, because that's what it is. I thought that was powerfully written.
It is powerfully written. The question is, how can we get people to even begin to question their perception? Because their perception is created by the mass media, who tell us that was, of course, what the experts said. They didn't expect it would happen, but that's how it happened. How do we get people to question what they're being told? How do we get people to realize that this was a watershed event that was designed, I believe, to create hatred, to transform our society from a free society into the society of George Orwell in 1984.
Well, we must just keep working on folks, Dr. Stan. I try here in Maine, in New England, especially Maine, politically and in many respects, ecclesiastically, religiously speaking, it's sort of a desert, kind of a wasteland here. It's very difficult. There are wonderful people in this state. It's a beautiful state as far as scenery goes. But as far as trying to wake people up, it's a difficult job. But you know something? 9/11, so many Americans now have a gut feeling in their heart. They believe that there are enough lies in the government story that people are uneasy about it. And just like that poll you mentioned, quite a number of Americans, millions of them, did not believe the whole scenario that the government has laid out for us. And with that doubt, with people just not trusting the government's view, version of 9/11, which they spoon-fed the media, just like Waco, when they gave the media just what they wanted to give the media, and then the media presented this to us when they were 2 or 3 miles down the road with telescopic lenses, they had more freedom probably in some of these foreign countries, videotaping wars and things like that. They didn't have a lot of freedom in Waco. But this collapse of the Twin Towers and the 9/11 happened right in plain sight, just like Dave Von Kleist's video says, with a lot of us, you know, Americans just sitting in our recliners watching this. And if folks are happy to believe the government's version, then we're in for a rough ride here in America, because we're losing our rights. The Patriot Act was not designed to make us a freer people.
Well, the Patriot Act was not designed to have anything to do with Islamic terrorism, because you can read that bill through 15 times. You will never once see a mention of Islamic terrorism. They've redefined what terrorism is. Terrorism is anybody who wants to change our form of government. Well, that would mean that the people in the Council on Foreign Relations are terrorists, because they are intent upon changing our form of government. So, but I don't think anybody's really going to invoke that charge against them under the Patriot Act.
Not anytime soon, Dr. Stan.
No. But our job is to get people to understand that behind the people in the Council on Foreign Relations and the Skull and Bones and the Rosicrucians and the Theosophists and certainly the OTO and all of these secret societies we talk about are these powerful spiritual forces which are energizing this deception and really blinding so many good Americans so that they cannot see reality. And their reality is simply the flickering images they see on their television screen, not what's really going on.
Well, that's exactly right. And it's time for folks to really turn off the television and tune in to the alternative media to listen to shows like yours, Dr. Stan, and the Power Hour with Joyce Riley and Dave Von Kleist. And Tex Mars does a wonderful job. Jeff Rentz has a good program. It's not like the truth isn't out there.
No, don't forget Alex Jones.
We can't forget Alex. Alex Jones is doing an excellent job. He was just there in England very recently with a bullhorn in front of the Parliament building. It takes courage to get right in the face of these folks who want to lead us into a totalitarian system. And this 9/11 has really greased the rails for it. The situation in Oklahoma was bad enough, and the cover-up of the shoot-down of Flight 800. But now we have this, where something happens right out in the open. There had to be witnesses right there in New York, right, that were there on the sidewalk, who must have heard these explosions. There were people inside the building. You remember reading, Dr. Stan, the firemen that said that they just had a few little fires to put out. If that's the case, if they're talking back and forth to the people above them in authority and they say we just have a few fires to put out, a few pockets of fires, how did it get from that to a burning inferno that was so hot that it just melted these steel columns with the massive amount of concrete around the steel? Supporting the steel. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, I think there's one very telling picture, and I've seen this several times, and that is there's this hole in the side of the building. I think it's probably the North Tower. And there's a woman standing there. And
yes.
She's standing, and you can see her standing there. You know, so obviously the floor is still intact. And, you know, and there's no terrible smoke there. She's not thinking of jumping. She's simply looking out, hoping against hope that help will come in one form or another. But, you know, if there was a terrible inferno inside, and there's no smoke coming out exactly where she is at all. So, I mean, if there's this terrible inferno, how can she just be standing there, you know, looking out through this gaping hole in the side of the building?
Well, you make a good point, Dr. Stan. That's another hole in the government's argument. It's just preposterous. And I've thought of something over the last few months. Were there any rescue attempts? I don't know this, Dr. Stan, because I don't watch television. I depend on shows like yours, broadcasts here, the internet, to get my information. I don't watch TV. But did they try to rescue the people who, you know, we saw people jumping out. I saw these people on the video. You could see pictures, you know, in the newspaper, people jumping out of the buildings. And they needed to be rescued. Why didn't somebody come over with a helicopter and lower a rope, some kind of a ladder rope, and attempt to rescue these poor people before they perished?
Well, you have to understand that when there was the attack on the World Trade Center in 1993, the bombing of the World Trade Center, many of the people went up on the roof and were rescued by helicopters.
Yes.
But this time, they locked the doors, they bolted the doors, so there was no way to get up there. In fact, there's certainly a great deal of information that comes from people who were there and were able to call out. There's a book, 102 Minutes, that tells about this one man who had keys to get up on the roof. He was a window washer. But for some reason, they got up there, and the doors were bolted. There was no way to get up on the roof. There were helicopters that, at least on one of the buildings, could have rescued those people, but they were not able to. They were not allowed to, and the people were not permitted to get onto the roof. Why would they bolt and lock those doors to the roof when people had escaped the first time? And you can only surmise what the explanation might be. Why on that morning, even the fellow who had the key to the roof, and that's covered in the book called 102 Minutes, why he wasn't able to get onto the roof.
It's just as if they wanted the most casualties possible.
But you see, we would have to surmise that there were people who were terribly evil, that had no compassion for human life, if you were going to believe that this was allowed to happen.
And that's hard for a lot of Americans to stomach.
But there really are people like that, and if you listen to our program long enough and read the writings of people like Jacques Cousteau and Bertrand Russell and George Bernard Shaw, these Barbara Marx Hubbard, Prince Philip, Dr. Sam Keane, we quote so many of them in our writings, they know exactly what they want. David Foreman, they have no concern at all about human life. We've killed almost 50 million unborn children here in the United States since Roe versus Wade. Between, well, maybe 45 million, something like that. There really are people who want to kill children.
Oh, yes, and the slaughter continues, Dr. Stan.
And you'd have to be awfully evil to be like that. But don't feel bad if we've only maybe 45 million here, but we've financed the abortions of literally hundreds of millions throughout the world with our tax money, because there really are evil and wicked people working at the highest echelons of both political parties. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Philip to wrap up the program. Well, Philip, do you have a website you'd like to get out?
I don't have a website, Dr. Stan.
Okay, fine. Do you want to put out an email or anything if people want to get in touch with you?
I don't have an email address.
All right, that's fine. We'll be back in just a minute to wrap up the program with Philip Dick. Well, Philip, we've got about 3 minutes. Go ahead.
Well, I'd like to give the listeners some hope. We're in a very difficult time, and folks need to wake up. We don't have much time left for people to realize what's happening. And everyone listening out there needs to take the information they have, not the scariest information they have, but some good information, and share it with friends and neighbors, folks that you know are interested. Because without people being woken up to the situation that we have at hand right now, you can imagine, Dr. Stan, how this is going to be used around the world. People are already discussing the fact that the way we've gone into Afghanistan and the way we've gone into Iraq, they're comparing America to Nazi Germany. And I don't know if a lot of the 9/11 researchers realize the dangerous position we're in, but it's as if the powers that be have the United States checkmated. We're in a very dangerous position because, like you were speaking of George W. Bush pretty much being in the dark, he looked like it did catch him by surprise. The powers that be can use this. This whole thing is a weapon against us because of how the official explanation can be blown out of the water as being a lie. And then the people in this country and the people overseas look at this whole thing and they say, well, this is a dangerous situation. And the globalists are going to have us so hated around the world that if this country doesn't do what they want us to do, going from country to country like they have planned, then they can use this event, Dr. Stan, to turn world opinion against us. We're in a very sobering position.
Well, at one time, everyone in the world knew America was a Christian nation. And they look and see what America is doing today, and they say, if that is Christianity, I don't want anything to do with it. Now, I don't believe, of course, the people in control represent Christian views at all.
No.
I think if we were truly a Christian nation, why, we would be practicing Christianity, and people would see our love, they would see our benevolence, our humanity. But unfortunately, that's not the picture they're getting today. Philip, we're out of time. We could have to do this again sometime and take a little bit longer. But God bless you. Thank you for everything you're doing to get the truth out across America.
God bless you. Thank you so much, Dr. Stan.
Good night. And keep up the good work there in Maine.
Thank you. You too, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you're out there across America and you believe, as I do, that we're involved in a spiritual battle being played out on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield, if you believe that if we do not get people to understand what is really going on, that we're going to lose America, that we're involved in an epic struggle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization, if you believe these things and you believe we have a unique ministry, we hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters or helping us to get the information out across America. Now, if you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, and I would suggest perhaps either the May newsletter, which is the Occult Hierarchy Part 1, or the June newsletter, which is the Occult Hierarchy Part 2, we'll be glad to send either one of those to you. If you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, that's 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, you can go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And you can pull down our newsletters there. We give you our permission to copy them. We give you our permission to circulate and distribute them and make as many copies as you want to. And you'll find an awful lot of good information there. We have actually taken my newsletters that deal with 911 and put them into actually three pamphlets. The first one is called Foreknowledge 911, Part 1, The Terrorist Attack. The second one is Foreknowledge 911, Part 2, Spying on America. And the third is The Triumph of the Intelligence Community. That's Part 3. So all of these are available if you're interested. And we hope many of you will want to know more about them. And, of course, you can find out about everything about our ministry by going to our website at radioliberty.com or by calling us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. My views on how this all fits together are very well laid out in a book which I wrote called Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. And, of course, we hope that you will go to our website at www.radioliberty.com. And if you would like to get either a catalog or a free newsletter, again, our telephone number 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we really are at war. America, our future, our family, our freedom are under attack today. And then let me simply close with one of my favorite poems. Back of all that foes have plotted, back of all that friends have planned, back of the schemes of men and demons is a higher hidden hand. Warp and woof are heaven created, every pattern good and wise. Oft perplexed by earthly standards, but good and wise in heavenly eyes. Though the cause of evil prospers, yet his truth alone is strong. Though a portion be the scaffold and upon the throne be wrong. Yet that scaffold sways the future, for in the dim unknown standeth God within the shadows, keeping watch upon his own. And I believe that, well, demonstrates what we're told in the Bible, and that is that for we struggle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. And I believe that's the real basis of everything that's going on today, is that there really are people who have accessed the hidden forces in the other dimension, and there really is another dimension. That's the dimension that mediums contact with. And many of these forces are working within our society today. That's the story that I tell in my Occult Hierarchy Part 2. And, of course, I quote what they have to say, not what I have to say. What they have to say about the other dimension and its impact upon the political system in our country today. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And, of course, we'll be back in just a moment for our next hour here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have this on the line, Bob Chapman. And Bob certainly is an observer of what's going on for, well over 40 years. He was in this, I guess, in the late 1950s, looking into the finances of what was going on in our society. He had his own brokerage firm for many years, a very, very large and successful brokerage firm. Today, Bob writes something known as the International Forecaster, which comes out on a weekly basis, and I get it usually on Sunday and make it a point to try to have that read before the first week comes, because it gives you a tremendous overview of what's really going on financially and the financial markets and really in so many of the other things that are going on in our society today. So, Bob Chapman, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, it's very, very nice to be back with you again. I enjoy your program very much.
Well, thank you so much. And let's go ahead and see. Gold has certainly been moving up. The dollar seems to have topped out and be perhaps descending again. What's your take on what's happening from that point of view?
Well, as far as the dollar is concerned, when it reached 81.5 on what they call the dollar index, which is made up of a basket of currencies versus the dollar, and against the euro at 136.6, it had a rally, and a very robust one. The dollar index went from 81.5 up to 92. It's since broken back to approximately 87. The euro went from 136.6 down to, in intraday, 118.5, closed about 119. It's currently 124.5 approximately.
So the euro then is falling as well as the dollar?
Well, all the currencies except a handful fell versus the dollar during that three and a half month rally. And that's over. In my publication, I said that's what would happen, and that is what has happened. In fact, through the years, for some inexplainable reason, I've been more right about currencies than anything else that I've ever made predictions on. And I can't understand why. I've never professionally traded currencies, but I'm pretty good at it. I believe that the dollar is coming back to reality. There's a whole group of things that is bringing it back to reality, and that is why gold is now challenged its former high of about 4 months ago, which is 446 on a spot basis, and I believe that by the end of the year it could go back up to the high which it hit in 1984, which was 512 per ounce.
All right. Well, of course, the thing is, how much of this is actually an increase in the price of gold? How much of it is a decrease in the value of the dollar, which, of course, would mean that the gold would be up more relatively simply because the dollar is down in a similar manner as we see the price of oil going up? How much of that is because the price of oil is going up, and how much of it is because the dollar is buying less because it's falling?
Well,
Hold that thought for just a minute. Okay, Bob, why don't you go right ahead there?
The comparison that you make is a valid one, but there's other reasons beside that. And the problem is that the underpinnings of the dollar are being torn out from underneath it by what is being done by the U.S. Federal Reserve System and by the fiscal deficits that have been created by the previous and current, which is the same administration in Washington. And I believe that we're going to see in the not-too-far-distant future, sometime next year, and maybe before that, that the dollar will go to 70 on the dollar index, which is now 87. I think it will challenge way 81.5 and then go down. In the meantime, gold will go back to $850 an ounce.
Go ahead.
That'll happen prior to the end of the year, and silver will be taken up with it. Gold is now leading the pack, so to speak, and silver's following, which has not been the case for the last several years. I believe that from what I observe in 50 years of being in the gold markets as a professional, I believe that the price of gold and silver, particularly gold, and other markets have been manipulated by the United States government and the Federal Reserve and other central banks. And I believe that their ability to continue to manipulate them and particularly suppress the price of gold is coming to an end simply because they're running out of gold. They've sold out thousands of tons of gold over the last, particularly the last 7 years. And I think that's coming to an end. And I think professionals realize that they've kept their mouth shut, they've stayed out of the market. As long as they're making a lot of money, they don't care what the government does. That's their attitude. And I know that because I was in that industry for 28 years and I own my own brokerage house. And so, consequently, the dollar's going to go lower, gold and silver are going to go higher, and there's going to be a lot of other events in the interim that will add to that formula, so to speak. We've left out the possibilities of terrorism, of which we've had very little here in the United States since 9/11, and there's also the factor of a continuing occupation and war in the Middle East, and if the administration has its way from what they've said themselves, then we will have a conflict with Iran and Syria.
Hold that thought right there for a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I had asked Bob Chapman, is the price of gold really going up, and the price of oil really going up, or is this simply a reflection of the fact that, since we're dealing on an international market, that with the price, with the value of the dollar going down, that this is not a real phenomenon? And it was Bob's response that certainly the dollar falling would tend to drive both gold and oil up on international markets, but there are other factors. And then he went on to suggest that we are living in very, very dangerous times. He thinks that the gold will probably go up to well over 850 and that silver will probably follow right along with that. And then he points out that there could be other factors like a terrorist attack, or he is concerned about the possibility of the United States attacking Iran. Now, I would like to point out that from a purely logical point of view, why it would be insanity for us to attack Iran with its close alliance with both Communist China and Communist Russia and with India. But, of course, we don't live in a rational world. And if you understand that there are other forces working behind the scenes that most people are aware of, then this is certainly a possibility. Not logical, but then so very little that happens today really is logical. Would you agree with that or disagree with that, Bob?
I'd very much agree with it because it's human nature, human failings, ego, arrogance, greed, and this is what we're experiencing again and again in our world. It's nothing new, and we just have a different set of players this time. And I think any thinking person realizes that the invasion of Iraq was not based upon terrorism and the reasons that were given to us for that attack and occupation are spurious. And I believe that if the United States and Israel attacks Iran, we're going to have a third world war on our hands.
I believe you're absolutely right, and I think that that is exactly what the elitists intend. They intend to antagonize the whole Islamic world and blame the whole Islamic world against America.
And that will lead to control of the American people. And what these elitists behind the scenes are looking for is the placement of world governments so they can control everybody, because they think that they know better what's good for us. And this has been happening for centuries. It's nothing new for those who really study history. And I believe that they're going to take a crack at it. And I received intelligence just today from Europe that tells me that there are elements within the CIA who have told other agencies that are like the CIA in other countries that the government in Washington wants to attack Iran, and they're afraid of a third world war. And I believe that there's a good possibility that General Byrne, who was cashiered this week, forced to resign, supposedly for having illicit sexual affairs, I've already been able to discern that that's entirely untrue. And there are several reasons why he could have been taken out of his job. But I think the preeminent one is that there are factions within the American military, which I have reported on for the last several years, that existed and might make a move to stop government from doing what they might do in the Middle East, like with Iran. And I think that's happened.
Are you suggesting
I think there's a lot of things going on that we don't know about.
Are you suggesting then the reason that the four-star general was relieved of his command was because he was associated with people who were very displeased with what the government was doing, felt it was unconstitutional, and perhaps were planning some sort of a seven-day in May scenario?
Absolutely. That is a very distinct possibility. There are other things. I think the other main thing, because of the job that he had, which was training and echelon command, if you may, and I think the other reason is that they may, the government, the administration, may have been trying to bypass everything and control the military directly from the White House. And I think that's another salient reason. But the first one is the most powerful. And with the other intelligence I received, and incidentally, I worked for the United States government in intelligence for 5 years, so I get an idea of what it's all about. And I think the first choice is probably the right one, but as a backup and a possibility, I've given you a second.
All right, fine. Well, of course, we live in very uncertain times, and I think that everybody out there should realize that apparently there's a great deal of information that Vice President Cheney has asked the military to come up forth with a plan for a nuclear strike against Iran. Is that accurate, you think, Bob? This certainly is the information we've gotten from a number of articles. Is that conceivable that we would be really thinking of launching a nuclear attack to take out Iran's nuclear capacity?
Without question.
Well, and why are we so concerned about Iran that doesn't have nuclear weapons, and we aren't concerned about China that does have nuclear weapons and has threatened to attack us? And on several occasions recently, Chinese military generals have talked about a nuclear attack on America. So why are we concerned about Iran that doesn't have nuclear weapons, and we're not concerned about China that does?
Well, it's very simple. OIL. And Iran get lots of it. And the people in Washington and the people who are in the oil industry in the United States want that oil, just like they wanted the oil in Iraq.
Well, certainly, if they got the oil in Iraq, why are the prices of oil going up? Why is oil production in Iraq not up but down?
Well, there's been a lot of damage to all kinds of facilities in Iraq, and that is impeded. The production's off still about 50% from the time that Saddam Hussein ran the country. And, of course, a lot of the equipment, too, was old and decrepit. He didn't put any money into the operation to speak of. He just pulled money out in order to keep himself in power and enrich himself like so many people do who run countries like the Saddam Husseins of this world, who incidentally was in partnership with the Bush family. And I believe that when all is said and done, people are going to be looking back in history and saying, you know, how dumb could the American people have been to swallow that fish story, hook, line, and sinker, about why we have to go into Iraq and why we have to go into Afghanistan and why we probably will have to go into Iran and why we're using depleted uranium munitions. I wrote a piece today. Two-thirds of the men who have come back from Gulf War I have had problems relating to uranium isotope.
Well, of course, the government.
And many of them have passed this on to their wives and their offsprings. And of course, too, in Iraq today, there are hundreds of thousands of people who have died or are ill from the same thing. And also children are being born deformed, and some of them are being born and they're coughing up blood. And, you know, I say to myself, if two-thirds of our people who are going over to have this war and all those other people are dying, why would they do such a thing?
Well, I would say that we're dealing with very, very evil leaders. Certainly, I'm going to be very interested in the source of the two-thirds. The figure I've seen is about 30%. According to the reports we have, 30% of the returning veterans have, within 3 months, have mental health problems. That is the way they have of saying they're very ill, and we don't want to admit they're ill, so we'll say it's all in their head. Where did you get the figures on the two-thirds? I mean, I know you usually
have a source. We're talking about two different things here. Mental health is different than physical health. And uranium does not attack people's minds as much as it attacks their bone structure and other parts of their body. And that's why most people who are affected with uranium either have leukemia or they die of pulmonary edema. In other words, they can't breathe, their lungs collapse. In other words, they have pneumonia. And that's what is put on a death certificate. And all of these young people, and some of them are dying within 3 or 4 weeks, our soldiers, boys and girls, in Iraq. And that's why, when they send them back, that they won't send their organs with them, because they all have autopsies, and they remove them all so that a civilian doctor can't examine them and say, well, this person died from exposure to uranium. And they don't want the public to do that, know that. And if the public knew that universally here in the United States, they wouldn't have anybody joining their armies, because who wants to go over and fight a war and not get killed and come home and be ill and infect your spouse, if you have one, any of the children you may have? I mean, the problems are endless for an individual.
However,
so if this information gets out, no one's going to attend.
All right, now, Chris, when we get back, maybe we'll discuss this a little bit more. We'll get into some of the other things that are going on financially. Bob, are you on a hard line? We're having a little static. Would you like us to call you back so we get a better connection?
No, it's okay on this end.
Well, I know, but it's not okay going out over the air. Why don't you hang up? I'll have Jeannie call you right back.
Okay,
and see if we can just get a better connection. So if you hang up, and I'll hang up, and then we'll call you right back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, of course, is Bob Chapman, and with the International Forecaster. And certainly I'm very concerned about the fact that, according to the government's own statistics, 30% of our returning war veterans are ill within 30 to 90 days. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. We were simply talking about the fact that there have been recent reports from several sources that about 30% of the returning Gulf War veterans, current war veterans, Iraqi war veterans, are coming home, and within about 3 months, 30% of them have what they call a mental disorder. Now, that's what they said after the Gulf War. Everybody who was sick, it was post-traumatic stress, it was all mental, and yet they had all the physical symptoms. And if you read the Veterans Administration report as of September of 2004, we have copies of that, would be glad to send you at least the pages of that, or at least maybe you can find it up on the Internet. But this was a Veterans Commission report that said that almost 50%, in some units 40%, in some units 60%, of the Gulf War veterans who went to the Gulf did have the symptoms of Gulf War illness, at least three of the symptoms. And the government has concealed that, and they've lied to the American people saying there is no Gulf War illness. And yet, of course, they've already given 174,000 of the Gulf War veterans, first Gulf War veterans, disability, and there are 300,000 waiting for disability payments. So with that as the background, Bob, let's get into what's happening on the other markets. What's happening as far as the silver? My understanding is that in Japan, they're actually going to make it very easy for people to buy gold and silver. They don't even have to necessarily go to banks. Had you read that?
Yes, what they're doing is that they have a program, and you can go to a bank presently, and you can purchase gold, and soon silver. And you do it on a payment plan, and when you do that, you do not pay as high a commission as you might otherwise, and your holdings are held by the institution. And they want to open those kind of plans up in what we would call 7-Eleven stores. And so they're expanding the plan because they want more people to get involved in it.
Of course, the Japanese are very, very smart people, and if they certainly put their money in the bank, they get, 1% interest on it, or maybe no interest on it at all. And so they want to invest it in something, and they probably have a lot better concept of what really has value than the average American. They don't necessarily trust their paper money because they've seen what's happened in the past, especially when their market collapsed back, a decade, at least a decade and a half ago. So they apparently are really very attuned to buying gold and silver. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, it is. And it's interesting you bring that up because I've been rather disappointed that they haven't been larger buyers, particularly of gold. And they're holding $3.4 trillion in savings. They probably save something in the order of around 30% of their income after taxes, which is a very high percentage. And I'm surprised that they don't own as much gold as the people in India, as an example. And now that China's coming online to buy gold in a big way, and that is individuals, I believe that gold just is not going to go down in any permanent way. We haven't even entered phase two of four or five phases in this bull market. And it is going to be giant. If you think this real estate...
Hold that off right there for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. And Bob is saying that the people of Japan have not been big purchasers of gold in the past. And that really is surprising because they're saving up to 30% of their income. In other words, they're putting away for their old age. Now, unfortunately, they're not doing that here in the United States. Overall, we have almost no savings for the American people other than the pension funds, which have been provided by their employers. And, of course, many of these are very, very tenuous at best. But in Japan, the people save. They're saving 30% of their income. They have not been investing in gold. But is that about to change? Because, of course, according to Bob, they're talking about beginning to actually let the Japanese buy gold almost in 7-Eleven-like stores over in Japan. So pick up the story there, Bob.
Well, I believe as the yen gets stronger, which it will versus the dollar, and gold is denominated in dollars, that people will buy more and more gold because it's less expensive in actuality. But I think that the Japanese, because of their experiences during and after the Second World War, I think that they will go into gold in a large way because they're going to look at gold as another currency. And from their point of view, they certainly don't want to own dollars. And maybe they'll want to diversify out of the yen, and they probably haven't done so as yet for the most part. And so I see a large movement of yen going into gold in the immediate future. What has happened, you've got a two-edged sword here, and this is historical in nature. You have an inflationary environment in the dollar, which has been caused by overspending, whether it's in money and credit or bank credit or in fiscal profligacy. It doesn't matter. Inflation makes gold go up because it depreciates currencies. When that happens, it makes gold a currency, so that if you have recession or deflation, which could be depression, everything goes down in value, including gold and silver and real estate, whatever. But the point is, historically, if everything goes down 70%, which is really doable, then gold might go down 20%. And you will have already started from a higher high. And so you probably will retain all your assets and then some. And so that's what the Japanese are thinking about. That is what Europeans are now thinking about. Because gold versus other currencies has broken out against those currencies. And it hasn't done that for 25 years. So all of the fundamentals are there. And right now, you can't really use charts and waves and things like that to figure out what gold is doing. And the reason why is that the markets are under manipulation by people who are supposed to be looking out for our interests, when in fact they're looking out for their own interests.
Well, Chris, the thing is that gold has been the standard for 4 or 5,000 years, standard of value. Now, my understanding is that in China, people are owning gold, but they're even talking about opening up the silver market in China so that the Chinese can buy silver. And, of course, there are an awful lot of Chinese there, and, of course, they have a growing, exploding middle class. I mean, you know, they can have 200 or 300 million people, and that's only a small fraction of their population, but there is a middle class that's growing. What about the prospects for the Chinese buying silver as well as gold?
Well, I think it's excellent. China has, up until recently, been a very large producer of silver, and they had some very large inventories built up over the years. And from what I can see, I believe that in all probability, they're close to being out of silver on an inventory basis. And so I think probably the average Chinese investor may very well know that, and they know the demand is going to be there. And another thing, too, is the Chinese society is still a command society. It's a Marxist society, and so the government figures, well, if we need the silver, we can always go take it.
Well, I think it's very interesting that they've actually opened the market so that the average Chinese can buy silver as well as buying gold, and this is something entirely different. And if this idea ever takes hold in China, and they, of course, they've gotten in the stock market there, and a lot of them have lost a lot of money there, so they're looking for some other means of investing and security. And right now, as they see the price of gold going up, usually people want to buy gold when the price is going up. And believe me, the price has advanced dramatically here over the last 3 or 4 weeks. It's been the biggest move I've seen in a relatively short period of time, and I've been watching this for a long while. We'll be back in just a moment with Bob Chapman, and it's almost reminiscent of 1980. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Bob Chapman, the International Forecaster. And so if we find the people of China and Japan beginning to buy up gold and silver, and especially in China, with their middle class probably is 200 to 300 million people today. And, of course, they're not anywhere near as wealthy as the American people. But even if all of those people begin putting a little bit of money into gold, that would certainly begin to put some pressure on the gold market, wouldn't it, Bob?
It surely would. And India, you know, usually, historically, India has stopped buying silver at around 650. And they've stopped buying gold when it gets over 400. But that hasn't happened this time. They're still buying it hand over fist, and we're getting great demand out of Turkey and Qatar. And the reason why is there's major buying going on in the Middle East. And I thought it was interesting that most of the Gulf governments have very, very little gold. They're invested in businesses and currency-denominated paper, such as U.S. Treasuries and stock market and so on. And so they have very little gold and silver. So there is enormous untapped sources of wealth, of dollars, that can easily go into gold. And so this is only the beginning. Gold's got a long, long way to go. And I would say an absolute minimum of $1,600 an ounce, and I've been a specialist in gold and silver for almost 50 years.
Well, now, wait a minute. When do you anticipate it might get to, say, that sort of $1,600 an ounce?
It depends upon events, but if there are no untoward events, such as unscheduled wars or a great reversals or a great panic or in the stock market or some pestilence, if none of those things happen, I think that's doable next year. Because what happens is that, you know, once you get to 500, going to 850 is not very difficult. And then you'd have vacuum filling, and that would probably last, depending on normal circumstances, several months, maybe even a year. And then you'll have another explosion. And even when gold gets to 850, the only people who are going to be involved in gold are the people who listen to programs like this, and people who understand fully what's going on, and professionals. The public won't be in yet.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment, Bob, as we bring our stations back on board here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster. And before we proceed with our program, Bob, I'd like you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and how they can get the International Forecaster if they'd like.
Well, if they would like to get a free complimentary copy, they can call toll-free to 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. For those of you who are on the Internet, our site address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, FORECASTER.com. And for those who would like to email us, that address is international_. And an underscore is like a dash, but it's lowered down. It's like a line on a line. So we have international_forecaster, FORECASTER, at Yahoo, YAHOO.com.
All right, and of course, there's fascinating material in there, and it is certainly one of the best sources of information we can get. Bob has all sorts of intelligence sources, people feeding him information from all across America. So it is certainly an excellent read, and I always look forward to reading it. I read that. I read the World Affairs Brief on a weekly basis from cover to cover. There are so many magazines and newspapers and the other things. We scan about six newspapers every single day, but you always, at least I always want to certainly get all the information off of World Affairs Brief and all the information out of the International Forecaster. So it comes in on Sunday afternoon, and I don't know how Bob can get 35 to 40 pages of information from all over the world, but it gives you an excellent idea of what's going on. Now, Bob, certainly the administration has been very, very proud of the fact that they had produced something like 220,000 jobs this last month. 220,000 jobs. It looks like the Bush administration plan is really working. The economy is moving forward. How do you respond to that? Because, of course, sometimes, what does they say? The figures don't lie, but liars figure?
Well, first of all, the economy has moved forward simply because we have the lowest interest rates in over 40 years. And they are making credit available to people who shouldn't have credit, and some of them can't even read or write. And all you have to do is make your mark on the line today, and you get a house. And so that's the basic reason why not only our economy, but some others, have done so astonishingly well over the past 3 or 4 years. As far as employment is concerned, those figures are not true. We are suffering the lack of employment, which is being caused by outsourcing of corporations and also of offshoring corporations. The offshoring is the whole company moves out and they start producing in China. The whole company moves out and they have their service work done from India. And then you have outsourcing of all kinds of other jobs. And that's the reason why we have not really had the creation of jobs in any way that we had in previous recoveries.
You know,
why are these figures the way they are? Why do we see the figure of 207,000 last week? And I got to be perfectly honest with you. The Bureau of Labor Statistics use what they call hedonics. And for those of us who don't want to get fancy, they're cooking the books. They're not telling us the truth. And that's why the figures are what they are. They are also not telling us the truth about the CPI, the Consumer Price Index. Inflation is far higher than the 3% that they talk about, and unemployment is far higher than 5%. I have my own figures. They're substantially higher. And I do the same kind of work that they do economically and statistically. And I've been doing it for 50 years, so I obviously have some sort of a grasp of what I'm doing.
Well, I thought it was very interesting. One of the best commentators I know, I always enjoyed Paul Craig Roberts. And he looked at those figures, and he said, well, if you look at the figures in the breakdown of this so-called 200,000, 17% of them were government jobs, and almost all of the others, if they weren't in the military or defense, were in service jobs. There were essentially no manufacturing jobs in that figure of 200,000, which I thought really was a very interesting observation. I'm certain you've looked into that aspect as well. We're not getting or producing any manufacturing jobs, or hardly any. Would that be a fair statement?
It is, and we're not producing many first quality jobs. I mean, if you get out of school today as an engineer, it's very difficult getting a job. And I hear from young people all the time because they read me on the internet, and some of them subscribe, and they're saying, well, gee, you know, was it worth it for me to get the degree? I mean, I just sent out 5,000 resumes, and nobody wants me because all of the jobs that I would be doing have been sent to Eastern Europe or to India or someplace like that. And so all those jobs that they have in reality really created are paying somewhere between $7 and $10 an hour. And that's not a good quality job. If you're evolving in that job, hopefully someday 10 or 15 or 20 years from now, you'll be making $20 or $25 an hour based on today's pay scheme. But the point is that, number one, the figures are fictitious. And number two, the jobs that are being created are not desirable jobs. They're the jobs with which people who don't have high school educations or even some of them who have college educations. I had somebody write to me just a few days ago. This person has 2 degrees. It's a lady. She's in her early 30s, and she had to take a job as a teacher, which was not the intent of her degrees. And she gets paid $8.37 an hour to start.
And so I think this
that's what we're talking about.
And they've really planned lowering the living standards of the American people, but they cannot let the American people know that this is what they're doing. They're planning to raise our living standard to that of the Bolivian peasant. We've got Dennis calling from Covina. Hi, Dennis. How are you doing tonight?
Okay.
Did you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I just had one quick question I wanted to ask Bob Chapman. A couple of years ago, I bought a lot of silver, and I just wondered if I goofed by buying silver rather than gold.
All right, fine, Bob. That's a legitimate question.
Well,
how would you?
Silver in that period has gone from about $4.25 to about $7.25 an ounce. So that is not a bad move. On the other hand, over the last couple of years, gold's gone up about $100 an ounce, which is about one third.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you bought the metal, silver bullion or coins or gold coins, you haven't done all that badly.
Uh-huh.
And it's probably a good time to add to them because I believe they're going higher. So to answer your question, you did the right thing.
Oh, I did.
Now, maybe you didn't go out and speculate in houses and make lots and lots of money, but you didn't take any untoward risk either.
And I think, Dennis, the upside potential for silver, I think, is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
I think nobody can be absolutely certain, but I'm certainly very optimistic about the long-term outlook for silver. How are you feel on that, Bob?
Well, I don't know how far they are away from exhausting the inventories, but boy, they got to be getting close.
And when that
at least over the next year, there won't be any inventory left.
When that happens, why the price is going to go right through the roof?
Absolute explosion.
So if I were you, I'd just stick right where you are. And if you can, of course, add to it, you want to diversify. But I would stay probably in the precious metals. Or how about gold and silver stocks, Bob? Would you think that's a pretty good investment at this time?
I think that's a good one. And of course, buying stocks is gambling. I ran a brokerage firm for many years, and I specialized in gold and silver stocks. And metals are a fundamental investment, and metals do have their risk, but nothing like, and if you pay fully for cash, but nothing like in the stocks. But the rewards in stocks are usually far, far greater. In the last bull market, we had stocks go from 50 cents to $50 and $60. And I believe that will happen again in exploration and junior stocks. And, you know, back in the 1930s when everything was collapsing, Homestake went from 36 to $636 a share. Most people don't know that. And so there are good buys and substantial companies out there. And if you'd like to know what they are, or if you'd like a complimentary copy, just call the 800 number. And I'll send it out. And any questions that you have, just email me and send me your phone number, and I'll call you.
Okay.
I'm very accommodating for people.
All righty. Well, I sure appreciate all your help.
All right, Dennis. Well, keep listening. Get the rest of the people down there, Covina. I know we got a couple of listeners there.
Right.
We need a few more.
Okay.
God bless.
Bye. All right. Thank you.
All right. Fine. If you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. And Bob was telling the story of this woman with 2 degrees, and she's coming out and taking a job at $8.46 or something like that an hour. Let me tell you, a the call that I had this last week from a friend of mine in the East, and he has a construction business. It's doing fine. But he had a couple of Indian architects come in and say, look, you have a construction business. We can, of course, do the architecture on this. We can get the plans back to you literally overnight. And, of course, our prices are very reasonable. And so he said, but, you know, of course, you really have to have somebody here, you know, in our area. And he was actually from the Massachusetts region. You have to have somebody here to go through the planning commission. Oh, they said, we actually have people here. You know, they're already here, and said, if you give us the contracts and you give us the work, why, we can have it back at a very reasonable price. So my friend sent them over to see a relative of his was an architect, and later talked to him, and they said, say to those fellows from India, come over there. And the fellow said, not only the fellows from India, I've had people from China, I've had people from Korea. They all have their local representatives. You can send the work over to China or Korea or India and get it done at a fraction of what you can get it done for here in the United States. That is what we're really up against. So if you are trained as an architect, you're going to be competing with people from Korea and from China and from India. If you are an engineer, you're going to be competing with people from China and India and Korea. If you're a computer programmer, the same thing. This is what we're really up against. And this is exactly what the elite who are pushing globalization want: to lower the living standards of our people, to redistribute the wealth between nations. And until the American people wake up to that, you know, and suddenly realize that the plan is to impoverish them, why, nothing is going to change. And if we delay too long, it may well be too late. Would you agree or disagree with that, Bob?
Absolutely. And I don't think most people realize that one of the reasons that the United States became a great nation economically is because they used tariffs. And sometimes they were 300%, 400%, and 500%. And to dispel what people have heard, and it's incorrect, that tariffs were the cause of the last depression, it's entirely untrue. And I don't have time to address it on this program this evening, but open your mind to new thinking. Tariffs are an excellent thing because they protect industry. Yes, prices may be higher for the things in your country, we'll call it the United States, and so doing, they protect the industry. They're more costly, but it keeps our people in jobs, and it certainly hasn't hindered the progress of the United States economically. And so the worst conceivable thing that can happen to America is for us to have free trade. We cannot survive because our standard of living is just too high. We can't compete with somebody who's getting paid 50 cents an hour in China, a dollar an hour in Mexico. We just can't do it.
In fact, the Mexicans can't compete with the Chinese either.
That's right. And their production dropped off 0.2% last month.
In fact, that's why they're coming up here, because they can't make it down there. They're flooding in here from Mexico because they can't compete with China either, but they're taking the jobs of workers here in the construction industry and in so many of the industries, and they're actually being welcomed by our government that is violating the laws that they're sworn to uphold. They're intentionally not trying to stop the influx of the Mexicans into this country. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know.
Yeah, it's part of bringing the wage structure down. And most of the people who have come over, particularly in the early days after NAFTA, which is 1995, they were from farming communities with no education. And the edicts of NAFTA destroyed the small farmer in Mexico. And that's why we have 20 million illegal aliens in the United States right now. And it's growing by 10,000 people a day. It's just incredible.
And, of course, the thing is,
they don't hardly... Well, they do the best they can on the border. Don't get me wrong, the Border Patrol, needs 100 times more personnel. But our government, our Congress, and particularly the people who hire these people and encourage them to come here, which are our major corporations, they are the ones of the blame. And now, I don't know if you know it or not, it was in the international forecast, but what they're doing is they're making an effort to give all the illegal aliens that have done reasonably well the ability to buy homes.
I think that's
what they don't have a Social Security number.
I think that's what's so incredible is that they're allowing the illegal aliens to buy homes that are being, of course, then financed by the finance companies that are backed by the government. Why would you allow somebody who is in this country illegally to buy a home? Why, of course, to keep the construction going, to keep the prices of the homes going up, to keep providing more liquidity to the whole economy. But boy, when this thing comes tumbling down, why, hang on to your hat, because we're in for a very, very difficult time. In fact, when we have time, I'll tell you what Alan Greenspan really thinks. I confirmed it today in one of the most amazing short conversations I had. When we get back, I'm going to tell the story and get Bob Chapman's response to that right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Bob Chapman. There was an article I read this last week on the Internet by somebody who said that they'd heard of this conversation between Ron Paul and Alan Greenspan, where Ron Paul asked Alan Greenspan about an essay he had written in 1965, where he said that the secret of the welfare state was that they wanted to be able to destroy your ability to save money and preserve money. Gold was the only real storehouse of wealth, and that's why they'd outlawed it and make it difficult to hold. And they were going to impoverish our people by preventing them from owning gold. In essence, it's very, very famous essay, and if you want it, why, it's included in our certainly in our CD that we have entitled The Coming Financial Crisis. And in my little pamphlet called The History of Money. But what was so interesting is that Ron Paul asked Chairman Greenspan if he wanted to disavow that statement, and Alan Greenspan said, "I've recently reread the article. I would not disagree with one word of it. I called Congressman Ron Paul's press secretary today, who confirmed the story. It happened not recently, but several years ago. Have you ever heard that story, Bob?"
I certainly have, and yes, it did occur. And in fact, it was part of questioning in one of the House hearings that, you know, I don't know which one it was, because he does several a year.
Well, it happened several years ago, and anyway, this was actually confirmed to me by Congressman Ron Paul's press secretary. So obviously, Alan Greenspan knows that everything he is doing is aimed at destroying the economy of this country.
Yeah, and he's done that for fame and fortune, and there are those people in life who decide that that's what they want to do, and they can sort that out later on when they leave.
Well, we're just about out of time. You want to just wrap up? You got about 30 seconds to finish up the program, Bob.
Well, firstly, we publish the International Forecaster by email every week, and we have a hard copy of the issue that goes out twice a month. And you can get a free introductory copy by calling 800-375-4188.
Give that number one more time.
800-375-4188.
And your website?
The website is theinternationalforecaster.com, and the email is international_forecaster@yahoo.com.
Well, Bob, thank you so much for being with us. It's always a pleasure and a privilege, and we'll look forward to having you back with us again sometime in the next week or so.
Well, thank you very much.
Good night, and God bless you. Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we'd like to get the various commentators on so you can get their intake and their input on what is really going on in the world today. And so, of course, we're not financial advisors. I'm certainly not. But I want you to hear what people who are a lot smarter than I am, who've been studying this for a long period of time, have to say. All I can do is tell you that we are entering some very, very difficult times. We do have a talk we've given called The Coming Financial Crisis. It's on DVD. We have a pamphlet that we put together. It's entitled The History of Money, and it's basically three of my newsletters that contains that essay written by Alan Greenspan back in 1965, where he tells you that gold is the only real money, and that the welfare status have outlawed gold because they intend to impoverish the people. Fascinating essay, and if you want more information on this material, well, you could always give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Of course, we hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do, 5 hours a day. We are hoping to syndicate this evening program. This is really quite an undertaking, and if you can help us in any way, why, we would certainly appreciate it, with either certainly a one-time pledge or just a regular monthly pledge. But if we can syndicate this program, and of course it will be heard starting next month on 30 stations every evening, and if we can syndicate it, we could double or triple that number. But we have people who are willing to do all the work. We have to, of course, take care of the satellites, and we really need your help to do that. So if you want to be part of the Radio Liberty family effort to educate the American people about what's really going on, about the plan to involve us in more and more wars, to use our military and financial power to bring about a one-world government, and, of course, to impoverish our people. If you believe, as I do, that behind everything that's going on today are powerful spiritual forces, then we hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. It was Winston Churchill who said, "Still, if you will not fight for the right when you can easily win without bloodshed, if you will not fight when the victory will be sure and not too costly, you may come to the moment when you will have to fight with all odds against you and only a perilous chance for survival. Or there may be a worse case. There may come a time when you will have to fight when there be no hope for victory, for it would be better to perish than to live as slaves." And even though I don't necessarily like Winston Churchill, he was one of the most intelligent, eloquent orators of modern times, and had a great deal of wisdom. He understood what was really going on, and he was trying to inspire the British people to rally behind his government as they took on the Axis forces. Of course, he didn't tell them that actually the English people had actually been financing the English groups, the secret society which he was associated with, has actually been helping to finance Adolf Hitler and encouraging him at every time. But they wanted to rally the British people behind the government, and with oratory like that, certainly he did rally the British people behind him, and I certainly respect his thought. But you see, if we don't take a stand now, when our victory will be sure and not too costly, we will come to a moment when we'll have to fight when there is no hope for victory, for it would truly be better to perish than to live as slaves. But our battle is with ideas. Our battles with programs like this, and with pamphlets, and with books and videos, and trying to make people understand the true spiritual nature of what's going on behind the scenes. Winston Churchill was a Druid. He was a Mason. He was affiliated with Cecil Rhodes Secret Society. He was dedicated, in fact, he had said, of Tennyson's great poem, Locksley Hall, that talked about the Parliament of Man and the Federation of the World, the most noble words ever written. He was not dedicated to Great Britain. He was dedicated to the globalist dream, as so many of the people in the world are today. But that's an entirely different story. Understand that there are spiritual forces at work. Please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until tomorrow, or I guess Monday now at the same time, may the Lord be with you.